Tapes and Scouts, a podcast where two friends review every single movie they watch.
Well, hello.
Oh, hi.
Didn't see you there.
Oh, you.
You just walk around so silently.
I was sneaking around.
Yeah, what? Wow.
This is not a rag with chloroform on it.
No, it smells, I'm pretty familiar with that smell.
It is a rag with chloroform on it.
Oh, well, what's that for?
Nothing.
Okay. Can I smell it?
Yes.
Oh.
So now that it's just us, time for me to do the podcast alone. This wasn't a really well thought out idea now that I have to do this by myself, but I did watch a movie. Maybe Tim will be up by the time it's time for his movie. Maybe not. Depends on how strong of a smell he took. This movie is from 2024. I watched it on 10/8/2024. It is Salem's Lot.
Ooh, Salem's Lot.
Yeah, Salem's Lot. It's back again.
You know that stuff doesn't work on me anymore.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, this is interesting. You're doing it again, huh?
Yeah, this is the remake.
Okay, that could go either way.
Yeah, it's 1 hour and 53 minutes. If you remember, the runtime of the original is two TV movies. It is 3 hours long.
I do remember. Well, Stephen King movies were like events on TV.
They were. And I mean, Stephen King don't write a short book.
No, he does not.
So, yeah. This is 1 hour and 53 minutes only. It is a horror mystery regular ass. Mm-hmm. Directed by Gary Dauberman.
The Dauber.
Cast is Mackenzie Lee. Lewis Pullman, who's Bill Pullman's son.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's fun.
Yeah, I looked it up as soon as I saw his face. I was like, is that Bill Pullman's son? Because it looks like little Bill Pullman.
That's awesome.
Unbelievable.
Little Bill Pullman.
Little Bill. And Spencer Treat Clark.
Okay.
Not related to Treat Williams.
Oh.
I know.
Boo.
Your movie summary for this one. When author Ben Mears comes back to his childhood home in search of some inspiration for his next book, he discovers the people in his hometown are mysteriously turning into blood-sucking vampires.
It must be that new goth club down the road.
That's right. Yeah, well, God, could you imagine if that was the remake?
It's yeah, a goth we just kind of like it, you know? It's all nice. New wave. We play new wave.
That's right. You like Depeche Mode?
Yeah. I do.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with Depeche Mode.
No.
Well, I listen to Bauhaus now. Okay. The thing about this movie is if you like the book or you like the Tobe Hooper TV films, I think you're going to really dislike this one.
Okay.
So here's the thing. The movie and the book do a really good job of when a vampire bites you, you die, right? Like you slowly deteriorate and then you come back as a vampire.
Okay.
So the concept is the idea of a vampire is paralleled with the town. Each person being turned into a vampire, obviously more and more, it's disease, right, are like spreading.
Right.
And so the town slowly whittles away and kind of dies into nothingness. Like it almost becomes a ghost town at a point before it's like, oh shit, the whole town. Like you have this, a lot of the book is the lead in, that part, the decline of the town. You learn about the town and you watch people and the things and all the activities die down. The people begin to change. And then you get sucker punched with the, oh, fuck, they're vampires, which is really cool.
Right.
Like, it's like a lot of dread, and you kind of know what's coming, but then finally it's like, and oh, shit. All that, like, we were worried about, like, what was going on in the town, and it's like, oh, shit, now the whole town is going to kill a very small group of remaining survivors. So yep. It's so absolutely overwhelming and scary just from a sheer numbers game.
Right.
Where it's just like, oh, hell. Like, it was sad and scary, and you were concerned, and now you're like, oh, my God, this could not have been more horrible for us to find out than all the terrible things that were going on are now going to kill us.
Dang.
So the whole town is basically doing an impression of what happens to a person who's bitten by a vampire.
Hmm.
This has to eschew all of that because it's moving. So, like, you're dealing with a huge plot and you have to chunk all this out quick.
Right.
So the only way to do that is to really cut it down to the brass tacks. So the biggest problem is this movie suffers from like action movie syndrome, where it almost feels like we're jumping from one set piece to another.
Okay.
So it's like you don't have time to develop meaningful relationships with the characters. You don't get to see the bonds come and the absolute gut-wrenching moments of having to dispatch a vampire that was a beloved character from the first two acts of the story. Oh, you lose all of that connection because you're just moving at such a frenetic pace.
Right.
To tell such a large story in such a condensed amount of time. I think all the characters are likable. I think the casting is really on point. I think that the vampires and the way they do some things are cool. I will say the one thing that sucks ass in comparison to the original TV films is when the vampire children come to the window.
Mm-hmm.
It's so haunting in the Tobe Hooper movie. It's like cool and scary and weird, and like there's this like draw in the fear, like you almost want to go closer because you're so afraid. It's weird. It's like it's like the power of a vampire. I think Tobe Hooper really did a magical job of capturing the hypnotic power of the vampire in those shots. It's just really like kind of mediocre, passable CG with a lot of smoke in the new one. I was like, man, that's a fucking letdown. So I had to stop the movie and pull up YouTube so I could show Sam how much cooler it was at the Tobe Hooper.
I mean, I can envision in my head now, like the slow vampire on the window kind of lurking up. Like, I remember that.
Like that floating kind of like inhuman, like underwater quality to it.
And I haven't seen that movie probably since it came out.
It's one of the most effective images from outside of probably the actual Count himself.
Sure.
Just, it's one of the most drawing Barlow. I blanked for a second on that one. It's outside of Barlow, because we all know how he looks, because that's like that blue-looking Nosferatu with the really big fangs.
Yeah.
That, the scene of the kids beckoning from the window is one of the most haunting moments in any vampire movie, I think. It's really effective.
Yeah.
This one is hyper forgettable.
Poop soup?
Oh, man. It's just, I wouldn't even go as far as to say it's poop soup, because like poop soup, you got to take effort. You got to get the bowl. You got to get the BM ready to go. Mm-hmm. You got to just let it, you got to let it ride. You got to get it in the bowl.
Got to get in it.
That's controlled chaos right there.
It is.
This is like, what do you want to do? I don't know, just a kid and some smoke? I don't fucking know. How about that? And it's like, damn. Okay. Can't even take time for poop soup.
Would it have been cooler if the kid was just like smoking outside the window?
Yeah, like, it would have been. I think it would have just been haunting. Like, other, like, and it's just like he's full vampire-y. It's not like scary, but like, you know what I mean? Like, just the eyes and the draw. Like, it's very focused in the Tobe Hooper one. This one's just like a full on, like, I don't want to get anywhere near that window.
Right.
You're like, you're banking on the fact that everybody knows vampires have hypnotic powers. Like, a lot of the movie is just kind of grazed over because they know modern audiences are so well versed in vampire lore.
Right.
That it's kind of like, we don't have to explain it. Just move on. When Stephen King wrote it, it was a lot different of a time. I was like, okay, sure. That's how I feel. It was just kind of like, we just need to hit these moments. And the moments they chose to focus on were good. But the thing, like the motivations for characters to do things are just like, wait, why the fuck are they here now?
Sure.
Why do they just go here? That makes no fucking sense.
Right.
Like, there's zero reason you would ever do that. And they just do it anyway. Like the main character, who's the kid who's like the into like the monster models and stuff. He's the monster kid. He's just going, I'm going to go fight the vampire because I'm a badass. It's like, that's dumb. And you know better than that because you're the monster kid.
You should know that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You know how dumb that is. Like, it was just like all those, like, it's just like, but we don't have time to explain any past any of those really surface level things. And
dang.
That's what irked me about it. I did think if I had never seen this movie, and that's why I think like Sam's score is pretty telling here, because I had never seen anything to do with Salem's Lot, I think I would enjoy it. And I did watching it, if I could like try to push it out of my head that this is Salem's Lot and it's just
some vampire movie.
Yeah, a vampire movie I had never heard of. I think it was successful.
Okay. Well, that's at least good.
But it just like loses so much because it is Salem's Lot.
Right.
And it's telling one of the more classic modern vampire stories.
Yep.
So it's like I can only forgive it so much. And if I hadn't seen the book, I would totally be lost. I'd be like, I don't understand why we're doing the things we're doing. It makes no sense.
Right.
Like, I just wish that it had been two movies or a miniseries nowadays would have been fine. Like a limited series, like four hour long episodes or 45 minute episodes or whatever. Just bang out tell the story that needs to be told in the length it needs to be told. This is not it.
That's a big problem. We see that all the time.
Yeah, definitely. And this falls into the camp of it was for HBO's streaming service, Max.
Okay.
And it's like, I'm really glad they picked a story like this. I just wish they had been like, we're going to take the book that turned into a two-part TV movie series, and we're going to turn it into a four-part limited series. Would have been awesome.
Could have been great.
Yeah, so cool. So much opportunity. I think at the end of the day, that's really what kind of like irks me about it. It's like there could have been a chance for something even better here. And the fact they were able to get it this good with so many constraints makes me even madder that they didn't try for something more interesting and more faithful than just a better told story in general, even if you don't care about the Stephen King source material.
Dang.
Yeah. IMDb gives it a 5.6 out of 10.
Okay.
The Rotten Tomatoes critics, 97 critics, 45%.
That ain't good.
Audience, 1,000 plus.
Plus?
39%.
That's the death knell.
Yeah, it was rough. And I can see a lot of aggravation on the audience front, because you're going to get a lot of fans of either the films or the book who are coming hard for this one.
Right.
Sam gave it a 6. She said, I liked it. I thought it was all right. Okay. I also gave it a 6.
Okay.
I think if it weren't Salem's Lot, I would still give it a 6. It's just, I didn't understand key points of the story, and I wouldn't have had I not seen the previous films and read the book.
Dang.
Yeah. Really a letdown for sure.
That's a shame.
Yeah. I wish it was, again, still successful. I wasn't mad I watched it. I was just constantly thinking about how much better it could have been.
Interesting. Well, I'm sorry.
It's okay. It happens.
I'm very sorry. But I got a movie. Maybe it'll make you feel better.
I like it.
Maybe.
Maybe.
It's possible.
Uh-huh.
I watched this on September 17th, 2024. This movie came out in 1999. I remember going to the theater to see it.
Okay.
Payback.
Oh my God, is this the Mel Gibson Payback?
This is the Mel Gibson Payback.
Holy shit, I'm a lot happier now.
Yeah, this is a fun one.
Yeah, it is.
And there's a reason for that. This is an hour 40. Your genre, dark comedy, action, crime, drama. Director is Brian Helgeland?
Okay, Brian.
But he directed 42, A Knight's Tale.
Oh, damn.
He wrote on Mystic River, Bloodwork, Man on Fire, Assassins, which I loved.
Nice work, Brian.
He's done a lot. Your cast is Mel Gibson, Greg Henry, Maria Bello, David Palmer, Bill Duke, Lucy Liu, and Chris Christopherson.
There are some heavy hitters in here.
There sure is.
David Palmer, too.
I forgot so many of them.
Yeah, what a cast, jeez.
Yep. Your writer on this, partially credited as your writer, is Donald E. Westlake, because he, as Richard Stark, wrote the novel it's based on, which is The Hunter, because it isn't known as Parker. It is known as Parker. It is not known as whatever the fuck his name is in this one.
Okay.
Porter. They call him Porter in this movie.
Okay.
But it is the Parker novels, the beloved noir Parker books that I love, that had those awesome comic adaptations by Darwyn Cook.
Yeah, Darwyn Cook.
So fantastic. I remember watching this, and I did not know at the time those books. And I was like, oh, this movie rules. And then years later, I'm like, is that Mel Gibson movie just supposed to be a Parker movie? And I went back, and I'm like, it sure shit is.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. I really like, it's tough with Mel Gibson, right? But like, Mel Gibson was at his peak here.
Oh, this is the top of his powers,
top
for sure.
Top of his power. He's in everything. Makes money even on his bad movies. This movie was a lot of fun.
The most American, and he's an Australian.
Yeah.
He's the Patriot at this point. He's everywhere. He's Lethal Weapon 4 at this point.
Probably, yeah.
I think so.
99? He might be, yeah. But he's definitely at least Lethal Weapon 3.
At least 3 deep.
Your movie summary, for those who don't know, after a successful heist, Porter is left for dead. Once he recovers, he seeks vengeance and wants his share of the money.
Hey, give me the money.
Give me the money. This is definitely more of a Parker movie than the Jason Statham movie Parker. Which is awful.
Yeah, that's true.
I hated that movie so much, because when I watched that, I was familiar with the source material, and I was like, why are you doing this to me?
Why you do this?
But this movie is really fun. So we see him get shot early on in the movie. We don't understand who or why, because that would give away the whole point of the movie.
Yep.
We see him in some seedy warehouse somewhere getting worked on by a very suspect doctor, pulling bullets out of him, keeping in mind this is the 90s and everything.
Yes.
And he is saved. And then it is him, even though he's still so incredibly hurt, going through people that he knows, finding contacts, and just trying to get back on his feet. The opening, like, 10 minutes of this movie is him bouncing back, and I love how quickly they show you how badass he is.
Yes.
He finds a dude who is approximately his height and sort of kind of he could pass for and steals his wallet and his ID. And then it shows him trying to, like, maneuver his face into a position where it's passable that he looks like the guy in the photo.
Yeah.
And then he buys lots of guns and does all kinds of, he's just ready. He's ready within 10 minutes of coming back, even though he's still probably bleeding and hurt beyond belief. And he's back into it. There are a lot of cool characters in this movie. Lucy Liu is a very interesting character because she hadn't quite become the powerhouse she is. She is basically a dominatrix in this movie.
That's right.
And
yeah.
She is so much fun because she is basically the person that Mel Gibson's character, Porter, is trying to get, has hired her for an evening. And she's kind of like nothing happens because she's there.
Yeah.
But he's just like, let her work. Let her keep working. And she's like beating him, the bad guy, for him.
That's
which is
awesome.
Really fun because it's her job description and she was paid for the hour. There's a lot of funny stuff. Kris Kristofferson is really good. Basically, Porter just keeps working his way up through this crew, and it's like insane to even want to try to take them all on. And it's for like, I think it's like $117,000. Like, it's not a huge amount of money.
$1999.
That is still true, but that's not worth this aggravation.
It's not, no.
And they're like, he wants $1 million. He goes, no, my cut was this. And like the whole time he's like, no, I just want this. And they're like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, everybody's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It's really fun. You get a lot of like cartoony characters in this movie, but ultimately it's a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed this. It is absolutely action porn. It does have some heartfelt moments. His wife does have a drug problem. And they deal with that pretty early on in the movie. He is working his way to Kris Kristofferson, and it's pretty interesting and intelligent how he gets close to him. So I'll leave it at that. I like movies like this. We don't get these a lot.
No, I think John Wick would be like the closest modern day equivalent to
John Wick is probably
the John Wick clones we're getting at this point. Some are good, some are not.
For sure. I mean, you watch those and you're like, I just wish it was John Wick.
Yeah.
Because Keanu's so incredibly lovable in general.
In general.
I would like, I've said this on our 50th episode about the adventure movies when I talked about the Four Musketeers. I feel the same way. It's just like, we need good storytelling. Like, yes, Mel Gibson's a big hunky guy at this time and he can beat everyone's ass and I get it. It's fine. But like, make him like do it for a reason. Like him just being like, I was wronged. I want exactly this and I leave everyone alone. And if they had just given it to him in an envelope in the first 5 minutes, they'd all be happily alive and, you know.
Absolutely.
I enjoy movies like that. So I enjoyed this rewatch. I hadn't watched this in years, probably since the theater or shortly after.
That's awesome.
Do you have fond memories of this one?
Oh, yeah. This was a big, like, we would descramble it on the descrambler box. Fair. It was of that age where it was just like, especially right when it went on to like HBO, was definitely, again, it's Mel Gibson. So you were watching Mel Gibson in this era. He was such a draw.
I did love it when things would go to HBO back in the day. It would just be on every night. Like, this new movie is hot, and it's on all the fucking time.
That's when, that's how HBO really, like, started its power. I mean, we've gone, you know, I referenced Salem's Lot was made for their streaming service, but way back, it was just like, we have The Terminator, and we're going to run it back-to-back with, like, one other movie every third showing of The Terminator to try to break it up, and that's what the premium home box office was.
Right. Like, during the day, you might get some kids' fare and, like, maybe, like, a nice romantic movie. Then it's back to The Terminator until you got too late at night for, I don't know, boobies or something, but, like, that was it.
In the heyday, in the 90s, it was like you would get like the like skin flicks and like the softcore porn at a certain hour.
Right.
Not that I know that, Mom.
No,
but
we don't know that.
No.
Hi, Mom.
We would, during the day, you would get like Warriors of Virtue and things like that.
Yep.
And then, towards the evening, you would get whatever the big movie that came right off of the main two pay-per-view channels were.
Yep.
Because it was always like movies and then pay-per-view and then HBO, Showtime, Cinemax, all those channels. titles all trying to chomp at the bit to get the next title.
They would maybe break it up with boxing.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Right. Yep. Then you started getting the sporting events, but pay-per-view kind of got the wrestling events, which were the really big draws. And then boxing went on to
HBO. I think boxing did really good on HBO.
It did.
They had a lot of the Tyson fights.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's it, everybody. I think this movie's really good, so let's get into the scores.
Score it up.
IMDb, they gave it a 7.1.
Damn.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomato Critics, 78 of them. They went back and gave this a 56%.
Criminally low, I assume you're going to say.
I think that's too low.
Yeah.
50,000 plus went back in the audience. That's pretty surprising.
Yeah.
Gave it a 69%.
Nice. That was all Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
He was paying people off left and right.
That's right.
You go back and get payback of 69%.
Listen, I've only got so much money, but do this.
Sugar tits.
I gave it a 7.0.
Nice.
It's an enjoyable movie. It's a little schlocky and a little silly, but it is ultimately as advertised.
I think any movie can get away with it as long as it kind of acknowledges it knows. Like when it winks at you, it's like, I know, we're doing some bullshit. You got me. Won me over.
I think there was literally only one scene where I was like, that's stupid. But everything else was like so fucking cool that I forgave it. I was just like, he wouldn't have came back to save the girl at that moment. Like, that's stupid. Like, oh, I forgot my gun.
Yeah.
Like, no, motherfucker, you didn't. Anyways, that's it. Bye.
Boy.